koutou no mai haere mai ki Kikats Tamaki Makaurau's Comprehensive Art Show, brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6 or live stream us at planetaudio.org.nz. Ko Marian Infante Tene, your host for the next 90 minutes. Just to start us off nice and easy, everyone, I'm going to be playing Kia Mau Ki Tō Ukaipō, Don't Forget Your Roots by 660 in Te Reo Māori. Have a listen, team.
Kia mau hoki ki tō whānau, kia mau ki tō ukaipō. I tangata ai koe, i hari mai a koe. Kia mau ki tō ukaipō, kia mau hoki ki tō whānau, kia mau ki tō ukaipō. Ai, tangata pai a hone, pakari ana te tūmai. Tuana, tare ana te ao, te hoki mai, te auraki mai. Aroana, ia ia te mana, he ao uri uri, he ao ori hori. Tā weko ana, te taura tangata, mo tuana te taura karawa. Uenga hoa, hare atu ana. E huri mai ano, raro ana ia ia te mana. Kimitikanga hou, e au hori hori. Tā weko ana, te taura tangata. Motu ana te taura karawa.
Kia mau ki tō kaipō, kia mau ki ki tō whānau. Ki tō ukaipō, i tangata ai koe, i hari mai a koe. Kia mau ki tō ukaipō, kia mau hoki ki tō whānau. Kia mau ki tō ukaipō.
Te kainga pukoro piako kore kore ko iho ana te ra takato ane imoe ngake katahi tonu katutaki rangi rua ko ngā mahara ma oho mai hoki koe i tōku tā i tōna nā te hawaia kore ana tōku ingoa e mā pēra te moeroa te aro i hiera au ae pai ana
ina pō. Ki te kainga, oho anoa,
界大きたくはハイカハラはいいなポーエパイの罠あふれてと目入れ目のほらにわてがねてねらあへへパイやないいなポーがウコロピアココレコレコイホアナテラエポイパイメトアイノネカトアナイテホアノアハエパイアナイナポイハノイテトヒイナワルアノカキアファノタキピテカイナオホアノアヤプテラカラヒワマヤノ
We'll be right back. τα φιτσίνο.
Titi, ke haere atu koe, me mato ke a ke a ho, ko te ra ke runga ko au ke raro, ka tutu ki tawa, ano ne ko koe to kumwana, puti a ke ke I toro mi au, tu kua hau, ko koe te tino ta ke, Aha, te taia te aha, te hara tau ne I tō iwa, kia tuho kia koe kaore I tika, te mata I a koe, ngā mea whae tikanga, kia maringi mai te waha, koe kera ki te kia tu, kia koe pono ana. Tino mohio ai I huri rapa e tōku a E tipu nei te pōkaku Ta ke o ana au Wana kore ana Ko hiri ka pō ki tēnā kau Te arora me aha I nai ane Kua kawa Ki a reka Te ahi ahi
song break for you all to just listen to. We were just giving Shreya a great amount of time to just get to us and join us in the studio. Hey, Shreya.
Hi, Maya.
Come closer to the microphone. Don't be afraid. So, team, we have three lovely guests in the studio with us today, and I'm very excited because it means we get some intimate time with these beautiful creatives in the room. I'm going to start off by introducing, I'll go from you, Pratik, if you want to just say your name and what you do in the arts.
Namaste, kia ora. My name is Pratik Vadgaonkar. I am an actor and now a playwright, it appears.
Is it your first time playwriting?
This is my first time playwriting.
Oh my gosh, so much to ask, so many things to dig
amazing.
Into.
This is amazing. My mind is getting blown every time.
I love it. I mean, I suppose that is what you got to do, you know? You got to explore so many different avenues of your brain.
Yes, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And Shreya?
Hi, namaste. My name is Shreya. And just like Pratik, I'm also a writer. And I write for theater. Yeah.
Amazing. Do you do any acting as well? Or you're like, I'm a writer. My pen is my sword.
My pen is my sword.
Amazing. I don't know if anyone was following Kick Arts a few months ago, actually closer to the earlier of the year. Shreya did a Fresh Off the Page play reading because she wrote Kama Sutra Chronicles.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
And
yes.
Rima's just pointing over here in the corner. What's up, girl?
I totally went to that, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
We can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
How are you, Rima?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Please tell us, who is the wonderful Rima?
Well, I'm an actor. Woohoo!
An actor. What does an actor do? Do you ever get that question?
I suppose so, or we just get a lot of, oh, have you been on Shortland Street?
Oh, sus, yes.
I know.
Though, have you been on Shortland Street?
No, I haven't.
Anyone listening, hit her up. Hit her up. That is amazing. So we've got two writers and an actor in the room. Lots of creative minds going about. But before we get into what they're actually here to talk about, I do just want to say kia ora, everyone. For anyone who missed the introduction earlier, my name's Marian Infante. I'm your host for the next however minutes, like 670? Maths not my strongest. This is why I'm a thespian. But I'm very excited to have you guys joining us today. And we're just going to kick it off and ask everyone in the room, why acting? Why writing? I would love to know. I'm going to look at you, Rima.
Okay, yeah.
What got you to the path of acting?
Well, growing up in school, I can only remember maybe third form doing a drama class. And
wait, third form?
Yeah, I know.
What is that? What is that? And like, I'm a baby.
Oh my goodness, maybe. Oh, yeah, nine.
Year nine.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So third form drama class, I kind of thought it was just games and pretty sad. My thoughts were, oh, you can't get a proper job doing drama.
Yeah.
And so I went through to Victoria University and I studied marketing and media and I graduated. But I used to love musical theatre, and every time I would go, I would come out buzzing. And I always wondered what it would be like to be on stage. And so after I'd graduated, I thought, oh, I might just have a bit of a gap year and try a performing arts course in Palmerston North. And I loved it so much that I've kind of put those degrees on hold. Well, I've finished them, but not putting them to that much use. But, yeah, I love it.
So are you from Palmy?
Yes, half of my childhood was in Palmy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And in terms of your studying of marketing and
media,
did you study that? Where did you study that?
Victoria University in Wellington.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So you spent most of your time in Palmy or Wellington growing up.
Yeah,
amazing. And what made you come up to Auckland?
Well, after doing a performing arts course in Palmerston North, I thought, I'm going to apply for South Seas Film and Television School. And if I get in, I'm going to keep going with this acting thing. And if I don't, hey, I give it a good old bash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll probably get back to finding a job in marketing and media. And, yeah, I got into South Seas. So that's what brought me out to Auckland. And I think that was in 2012. And I've been here ever since.
You've been here for a while then.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, it's amazing. And musical, have you sort of tried to dip your toes back into musical theatre?
Oh, no. I was purely a spectator in the musical theatre realm.
A mere admirer.
Yes. Not the singer, but I enjoy singing. So
amazing. I actually love that. And the fact that you have the gauge to be like, this is for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
Not for me to
get
into.
Not to try. Maybe just leave it to my own little personal concerts at home.
Yeah. What's your main go-to concert or musical?
Oh, gosh. I think what really sucked me in was Wicked.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Mamma Mia. I was brought up on ABBA music. My mum was like all about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I love that. Anyway. When was the last time Wicked was around?
Last year.
They tried to put it on, but I think it might be in the works. Like, it might be coming.
Coming back?
Yeah.
Ooh, very interesting.
Ooh, keep your eyes peeled.
Low-key giving someone the cheeky blow.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really true, but I think it might be.
Last time I saw Wicked was when I was in London in 2018, and it was wicked. It was amazing. It was incredible, and I think it was the first time I've ever seen it on stage. You know, you watch it on YouTube so much, but actually seeing it live is like next level, and I'm like, that is amazing.
Yeah.
I've only heard of these shows on the Broadway. My sister used to live in New York for a little while, and she got to see all these amazing shows. She tells me about Aladdin and The Lion King, and they're literally magical to see on stage, is what she tells me. And I have never seen musical theatre to this day.
Till this day?
To this day.
What are you doing with all your money, Pratik?
Bollywood movies are largely melodrama, so...
But have you seen that on stage?
Stage, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen some musical theatre on stage in India.
That's amazing. Well, now you've got to branch out to Aladdin.
I got it, man.
I was going to ask, did you get to see Aladdin when it was here recently?
No, I did not.
You have, Rima?
Yeah, I did.
I love you. Put your hand up. No one can see your hand up. I do that. I'm the radio mimer as well. But how amazing was that?
Yeah, the magic carpet actually blew my mind. I thought it was just going to do just a small little movement, but it was going all over the show.
At one point, I thought it was going to go over the audience. I'm like, how are you doing this? Yeah. I do not know.
Yeah. Well, I got to go backstage and have a look, and just the big machine they had, it just looked like, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, where they go into... Oz's kind of background area, and he's got all those buttons and stuff. It looked like that, but way more intense. So.
Like,
I was real quite life. Impressed.
That is honestly, yeah, that was quite magical, actually. It was just like a good show. Mm. But something I also was really amazed about was the Mamma recently, not recently, I keep saying recently, but like a year or two ago, Mamma Mia was here at Bruce Mason. I went and saw that, and then I went to UK and saw Mamma Mia over there, and the quality is just as good. Mm. And I'm like, man, New Zealanders know how to bring it. So I'm just like, I'm quite stoked for what's here for us, you know? Moving to you, Shreya.
Hello.
What has got you into writing?
I've always written, like, I've always wanted to write, but it didn't start out as something that, you know, I'm going to write for stage or I'm going to. So I used to read quite a lot growing up, and that just kind of led into writing. But I always knew I wanted to write. You know, I was always doing make-believe in my head and, you know, telling people stories, whoever would listen. So I guess this is just an extension of that. This is what I've always done. I mean, what else can I do?
So have you always grown up in New Zealand, or did you migrate to New Zealand?
I migrated to New Zealand. I was raised in India, in Bombay, and I spent some time overseas.
Shout out to all the Bombay people listening to Kick Arts.
Yeah,
both me and Shreya are from Bombay.
Represent.
Represent,
amazing.
Indeed.
And how old were you when you moved?
I was 27 when I moved to New Zealand. So
amazing.
I was a proper grown adult.
You were an adult.
Adult. I was adulting by then.
I still am.
So you adult at 21?
I mean, I'm still adulting now. I know I'm well past 21.
Well, you know, yeah.
When do you stop adulting, though?
I mean, I've not started, so...
Oh, gosh.
Rima, don't give me that answer. That's quite scary. So even in Bombay, you were already quite into literacy and stories and storytelling.
Yes. And that's actually what got me. But having said that, I knew I had to make money, just like, you know, I had to, you know, be financially independent. So all my education is sort of in applied communication, if... you know, for a want of a better word. So I was a journalist in India for a brief while. So everything that wordsmithing could get me, you know, sustenance, I did. But that kind of fed into my storytelling, because you get life experience and you see all these stories. I mean, I remember one of my friends saying that fiction is the best place for stories, but reality is what feeds into that. you know.
Wow.
So
truth is stranger than fiction.
It is. It really is. It, yeah. So it kind of fed into my storytelling, and mm-hmm. The kind of stories I do tell, you know, definitely are impacted by my other life, which is, you know,
your other
my
life.
Yeah. So I moonlight mm-hmm. as a fiction writer or a writer for a stage, but my day job is also in communications, but it's, you know, the other life that I lead. So yeah.
Well, it's actually really admirable that you managed to sustain yourself as a wordsmith. I like that. I like that word. It sounds real badass, you know, like I pay my bills and I write words. It's amazing. That's pretty cool. And would you say that your transition from, you know, knowing what life is in India to moving here, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, was communication and the way people talked and conversed, is it easily translated to here?
Well, yes and no. I was schooled in English, you know, so my English was okay. Mm. I could communicate perfectly in English, but the cultural nuances, you know, that come through language, those are so different, and it takes a while to get used to that. And that really helps me connect with people, you know, when you know how people speak and what they mean mm-hmm. when they say something.
Mm.
It's really important to know and tap into that to be able to connect with people.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, because I suppose that was what I was trying to get at, because I was like, it's one of those common questions I get asked when, like, oh, have you always spoken English all your life? I'm like, yes, Greg, I've always spoken English all my life.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, I don't know. Greg just popped me. Sorry, Greg. Who was Greg? but, you know, like, I always used to go, I was like, oh, your English is so good. I'm like, I was taught it.
We blame the British for colonizing most of the world.
Oh,
so,
my
gosh. I can thank them as well, but blaming is much better.
Yeah. a lot of questions to be asked. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and I suppose that was one of the things that I was really curious about being a writer. Mm. I know now I benefit more from my creative writing than I do with my formal writing, because the level of formal writing in the Philippines is very different to here. Like, you know, like you were saying, the different words and the different nuances that people use, or even like in daily conversation of how you greet someone is very different.
Yeah, 100%.
And but that doesn't mean I didn't know how to speak English.
Yeah, that's right.
And so how long did that, I suppose, that take you to sort of master, to figure out, like, was it something you just had to live here for a bit to be like, that's how you speak?
I think so. I think immersing yourself in it helps, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the other thing, that just having people from different walks of life, I think, converse with you and have that interaction is important. And I think that really fed right back into my whole thing of telling your own stories, because that's how you kind of have that cross-cultural understanding and sort of empathy for others, and mm-hmm. it kind of filters down to the way you speak or mm-hmm. where you understand or where you hear people as well, because what they say and what they mean could be completely different in
absolutely.
Your head.
Mm.
So it's not about just, I mean, I guess it is about English, but and I say that with pride, that English is my second language and I've grown up with it. So I, you know,
I believe you, girlfriend. You know? I do. Yeah.
You know, so and that's true for many people, actually. You know, mm-hmm. English is a second language for many people. So,
oh, totally.
You know, so, yeah, it's about what people want to say. What are they trying to say to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
that's interesting.
And it's, I mean, from like an acting perspective, it's like how you communicate those words, right? And it's always a nice journey to go through with people. Is that the same for you, Pratik, or did you grow up in New Zealand? Or?
No, I didn't. I moved to New Zealand in 2012.
To New Zealand.
To New Zealand in 2012, and
I don't know why that was such a shock. It's
just shocking.
I mean, I've known you for like almost a year,
a year.
But I just always thought you were...
No. So I work as a doctor, as a day job, I guess, when I'm not doing nights. Yeah, I guess that has to count.
It's so what pays your bills.
It's what pays my bills,
that's
indeed.
Right.
But I'm just mirroring what Shreya was saying. I've kind of been a storyteller all my life. I wrote my first play when I was in 7th standard, which is at about the age of 12. And it was supposed to be this really patriotic, rabble-rousing a dramatic piece of theater, which turned out to be unintentional comedy. Mm. And I will tell you why. Because we got the same set of costume for the jailer, who happened to be British, and the freedom fighter who was in uniform. We're like, oh, let's cut costs. Let's save some money. Trouble was, when the jailer tried to take off the uniform, he couldn't get his trousers off. So my freedom fighter general walked onto stage in black jeans while the cast on the side was telling me, keep going, just ad lib now, just ad lib. And my father sitting in the audience was losing the plot, saying, is this supposed to be like this? So I think I wrote my first unintentional comedy at the age of 12. So yeah, I have been a published playwright before this, I have to say.
That's amazing. You're like impromptu.
Let's,
on the spot.
Yeah.
Wardrobe
malfunction. I learned that word very later on in my life, but luckily nobody dropped said pants on stage. They just changed it in the dressing room.
That's good. It's
great. Yeah.
Yeah. Great management.
Great management.
What I would call that. But how are you finding playwriting now?
I think discipline is the most challenging bit I find about writing. Because ideas are there in your head, they're swirling around, they're trying to find a way on page. And I've been a poet for a longer part of my life. I write in, or used to write in, Hindi and Marathi, the two first languages that I learned to speak as English.
Two first languages?
I guess so. In Mumbai, you get to learn a smattering of Hindi, which is a spoken as well as heard language. A lot of Bollywood movies, almost all Bollywood movies are Hindi.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marathi is my mother tongue. I learned it as I was growing up. So everybody around me spoke Marathi. The school I went to was predominantly Hindi, and the medium of education was English. So I have three first languages or no first languages. Which
They're
is
all
great.
Your languages.
Which is great. So as a poet in Hindi and Marathi, I have very little patience. I want to get done, put a thought on paper, and not knot it out as much. I'm very impatient and very possessive of the words once they're on page. As a playwright, I've realized that I have to be a lot more structured, because right now we've written about a 3-minute or 4-minute piece, and eventually when I kept writing at it, it went on to about a 6-minute piece, and then you get very, very possessive of those words. And then we had to go through a process, because we needed to be fair to everybody who was submitting their work, that the piece would be only about 4 minutes odd. And when you start to lose those words, it cuts at you and it hurts.
It
hurts
like
so much.
Like that saying that they say, killing your babies.
Oh, heck yeah. I'm like, don't kill that. That's such a beautiful thought.
Mm.
But I think one thing I've taken away from the experience of writing for stage this time is both discipline of putting words on paper, one, and then letting them be on paper and letting the director take over that. So I think those two are constantly fighting with each other.
I think you just spoke of like three different, completely different things there, but like that, it's honestly such a journey. But
yeah.
Have you ever written for theatre, Rima?
You can say no. For myself.
Yeah.
And thought, if I'm brave enough, I'll put it out there. But it's terrifying.
It is.
I really, like, take my hat off to you, because I just think it's you're putting yourself out there. It's so vulnerable. And even as an actor, you think you're vulnerable. But let alone these words being from someone directly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And being embodied by another person,
yes.
Formed by another person,
it is quite.
It's a bigger. What do you call it? It's a machine, right?
Yeah.
Like you're like the nucleus of the story.
At best.
But yeah, I mean, one. Let's break that down. You said writing your words on script.
Yep.
Sometimes it's so hard to get those words, because you're like, writer's block.
Yep.
What words and what language and, you know, in what format.
Yep.
I remember when I was trying to write my play, Panay, I was just like, okay, this is a bilingual story in Aotearoa.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became trilingual. But then I was just like, and I think one of the things that I really got caught up on is like, what font do I type this in?
And please tell me, what do you use? I'm so curious to know.
Ahi Karunaharan, shout out to you, my beautiful dramaturg. He was like, I don't care, just write it down. I was like, yeah, fair enough. And he's like, I don't care what font, what size, just get your thoughts out. And yeah, and I think when you free flow, actually, something magic happens. And what was the other thing you mentioned, Pratik?
I think the second thing was about editing and
letting go of your words.
Yes, letting go once they're on page.
Letting it be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any comments on that. What about you, Shreya? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's hard at the beginning, but then you could just get jaded.
You're like, I don't like this word anymore.
No, yeah. No, I think distance and time helps. You know, you just have to give it time. I think good work takes time as well.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, good work takes editing and a lot of objectivity. And it's what you become through it as well as a person. You know, me, I know for a fact that through my writing process, I become more objective about my own thoughts, about what's on paper, about issues, you know, that I'm discussing. You become more dispassionate and therefore more balanced sometimes, you know.
But does that challenge your writing process? Because you want to have a voice. You want to have passion or emotion in your work.
Yeah, and a lot of time the reason that I started writing was because of passion.
Yeah.
So, and I suppose that is true, you know, when you give yourself enough distance. Like, it took me a whole, it took me 2 years to get my thoughts on paper properly.
It takes time, yeah.
And
I guess it's a balancing act. You know, it becomes its own thing. After you put your thoughts down on paper, the characters are their own selves. And it's got a life of its own,
yes.
In a way. The writing, so you got to do that justice. Sure, a lot of inspiration is from life, and there's a lot of passion that's into it. But then the editing process is equally passionate,
correct?
Which requires the skill and the objective outlook.
Yep. Yes,
which is where I think a second, third, fourth, fifth eye about how people are perceiving your work comes in, and you have to choose whether you agree, disagree with their perception and whether you're going to let that affect, change, edit your work. The way I look at it is everyone is free to have their perspective, particularly about poetry, because it's not always spelt out what you want to say. And one piece of poem can mean something completely different
to another person.
To another person. It can be happy, sad, joyous. It can be many different things. And because you have to be patient, like Shreya was saying, with your work, you have to strive at it. Because another metaphor I would give it is you're chipping away at a stone trying to manifest the statue within. And sometimes the chip is going to go the wrong way, and then you have to look back, step away from this statue in work and think, do I have to change the whole statue now? Because
do I have to get a whole new rock?
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think it is such a time in your process that needs to be really nourished, especially as a first time playwright. Which is why I think it is important to have, you know, hold your creative integrity close to your heart, but at the same time surround yourself with people that you do trust to tell you that, hey, Pratik, this is crap.
We had through the year, actually, that my Prayas Fano tried to do was have regular writers' meetings. We did this monthly. We would have a writer's lab, sort of, where we would come and discuss a lot of issues, and also try to put things on paper, have that discipline, and have this trusted, safe space where we could bounce these ideas, know that they're shared in a safe space. And I think, like Marianne was saying, having all these close confidants that you could do this with, one, and then know that they will give you good feedback, yet while having your developing and having your own voice, was very helpful.
In terms of, I'm very curious, Rayma, as an actor, when you get a script, I suppose, we don't really think about all of that, do we? We look at this, we look at the script, and then we look at the story and the character. What we're trying to communicate, what we're trying to say. How would you say your process is in terms of taking on text and embodying all of that?
I'm a huge, like, text geek. I'm all about reading it and reading it and reading it and breaking it down and coming up with questions, like, why am I doing this? And also the lack of action or the lack of words, sometimes you can question that, like, why aren't I saying anything at this moment? Because it seems like I would really want to say something, but for some reason I'm not, just, yeah, really breaking it down, doing research. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
You like getting nitpicky at the little
words. I do. It's something that I get a lot from, actually, and if it makes sense in my head and fully justified, it just helps with the next step of, hey, let's play with it, let's put it on the floor. Mm-hmm. You've got all your intentions and objectives in place.
In your body.
Yeah.
So are you one of those people that breaks it down fully, like scene by scene or like thought by thought, and goes, who, what, when, we, how, why?
Well, if I'm finding it really hard to get with what's in the text, mm-hmm. I will do that. Sometimes it's just pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do like doing that.
Yeah. I've heard this thing that Anthony Hopkins reads his script 100 times before he will play it or act it out. Have you ever done that?
No. Look, that's probably why he's where he is.
But at the same time, when does one find like time to read a script 100 times?
Well, when you're Anthony Hopkins, you have time,
obviously.
I guess.
Obviously.
Time and money. I have a job. Yeah.
I will work on that 100 times reading. Yes. I mean, I definitely think it's one of those things as well that I think, you know, once you step away from the script and like walk around in your everyday life and suddenly you quite naturally think about your characters, you're like, oh, that's why that person did that. That's why they got the smack. Or that's, you know, like... And it becomes a part of your reality until, you do put it on stage. But, yeah, like, time is such a luxury now that I think about it.
Oh, I guess.
Definitely.
Luxury for writers, luxury for actors. And I'm going to start slowly dripping in the fact that in literally, 2 days' time, first world problems, 2.0. The whole reason why Pratik and Shreya are here. First World Problems 2.0.
Mm-hmm. 2.0. Was it 2.0? Yes, 2.0,
2.0. Well, I want to ask, how did the 1.0 go?
It was sold out. It was in basement, the upstairs studio.
Mm-hmm. Was it last year?
That was last year, 2018. Fresh off the bat after Dara, Prayas, along with Agram, went into First World Problems the first season. Mm-hmm. I think with the second season... We always knew we wanted to do this, and it's all new work. It's all new written work in New Zealand. It's written by about 17 writers.
Mm-hmm. 17?
17 writers, out of which only two are here today. But, yeah, we're repping you hard, rest of the writers. Know that you're well represented.
Amazing.
And I think with development, we were able to have 17 pieces that are very different from each other, that are not saying the same thing, that have very different outlooks at the same first world problems. And it's I think a very good representative of the South Asian diaspora, and by extension a lot of the diaspora that finds itself in this stepping into worlds kind of space. Mm-hmm. And which is a reality for a lot of our population, that they're not only stepping in two worlds at once in terms of home and New Zealand, maybe. Mm-hmm. But even having parents from different cultures, having lived in different countries. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody will identify when they watch the show, they will identify one story about it.
So I would love to know, what is the format in terms of, I know you guys are in the writing team, but if I was to, you know, I say if because I know I can't see the show, how gutting is this? So I'm doing this.
Why are you not seeing the show, Marianne?
Because I'm going to the Philippines.
Oh,
well,
I know.
You have your own set of first world problems.
I do. But this is my first world problem. I can't see the show. But I've been ripping you guys so hard. I'm like, guys,
thank
see
you.
The show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm curious. So, is it in terms of coming to the show? What should your audience expect? Is it 17 different shorts?
I think. It's an anthology.
Yeah, it's a mixtape.
You can look like your favorite songs put on a mixtape.
Mixtape, yeah.
And
a mixed anthology. Okay, wait, break it down. What does anthology mean?
Anthology is a collection of short stories or pieces of writing.
Yeah.
And mixtape is a collection of your favorite songs. And this is a collection of our favorite stories that our favorite South Asian creatives have written and created and directed and acted in.
And in terms of 17 writers, is it like three people are writing in the same piece, or how does that work?
No, this is 17 individual writers.
Holy moly.
I think this is a really good way to kind of say that this is, you know, representing diversity within the diversity, because there are so many different voices, you know, mm-hmm. within South Asian cultures,
yes.
that this mixtape is just one representation of it.
Yes.
I want to expand on that. Mm-hmm. Diversity within diversity. Okay, let me query. Isn't what do we mean by that? Because, you know, like, diversity is diversity, but I do find that in terms of that conversation, people have different meanings for what that is. So, what do you mean by the diversity within? Well, I already forgot the quote.
Within diversity.
That's the one.
Okay, Pratik, you're welcome to jump in whenever to help me out.
I got your back, Shreya.
Good, thank you. So I guess what that means is that when you say brown folk, it's not all one thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm clicking here.
You know?
Yeah.
There are different voices, there are different perspectives, there are different differences within that brownness.
That's right.
And I think nuance is where good writing for me happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in nuance and subtlety. I think that is what is different about this show, that there's a lot of nuance in there. And also the other thing I wanted to say, and this is going off tangent a little bit, but these are not, we all have migrant, we may have migrant heritages, but we are not just telling our own stories, you know, which are informed by our experiences, sure, but they're not just,
a migrant story.
Yeah, box-ticking exercise of...
To add into that, I think this word migrant needs to be packed away and put away, because we're all always moving.
Exactly.
Because we started moving from Africa, our ancestors did anyway, and we've been tracing that journey, and now we're in the furthest that we can be from Africa in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And if we trace Rema's journey, she will have migrated from somewhere to somewhere. And that sense of disestablishment from one place and then re-establishment somewhere else is what the journey has always been about, whether you call it expatriate, immigrant, whatever you want mm-hmm. to name it. Like Shreya was saying, the diversity between diversity that I've observed in New Zealand in the South Asian diaspora is so different, because mm-hmm. previously, let's say in Mumbai, I could look at a name and chart out with certain degree of comfort that I know where such and such person is from. But when I now look at a person who sounds like a brown name, that doesn't always fully take into consideration their experiences, their lived experience, and where or what they have been doing so far. I mean, like me, I've been here since 2012, and Marianne was surprised at that, because we've known each other for 1 year and the lived experience is so different, yet the same in some ways, mm-hmm. because I've seen Marianne in the last 3 months 4 times. And that's great, because...
In 3 months, you've seen me 4 times?
4 times,
that's a lot.
That's a lot, isn't it? Because we met for another Fresh Off the Page reading, then another Fresh Off the Page reading,
back
and now we're here, which is pretty awesome.
I totally totoko that in terms of, like... When you do look at someone like face value, or even just as your name, like for so many times, for so long, I've been known as Marianne. But because I went through the whole journey of Benai, I've embodied embrace and gone back to being Marianne. Mm. So it's just like this whole journey. But yeah, you know what? Yeah, the word migrant, I actually had a Pākehā friend who was like, you know, when I talk to you, I don't see you as like my migrant friend. And I was just like...
Because there is no such thing, right?
Mm. Yeah. And then he started going, I was like, well, I'm also a migrant from Scotland, you know? Like, where do you sit in this conversation, Rema? Like,
we've all come from somewhere, so I'm very much about what we've been talking about.
In terms of, like, your whakapapa, are you very strongly, like, grounded here in Aotearoa, or...?
Well, my dad's Pākehā and my mum is Māori, and we were brought up quite on the Pākehā side of things. Mm-hmm. But what's been really cool is that mum's actually been going through the whakapapa recently and finding the marais and getting I suppose, reacquainted with it all. Mm-hmm. And one of our marais is down just past Littleton in Christchurch. And so I go home for Christmas down that way, and Mum's going to take us to the marae. And
And is that going to be the first time for you?
Yeah, for that specific marae, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So,
but this is your mum's marae, and is that
my mum's mum's marae.
This is amazing. I can't wait to know from you what that experience will be like when you go for Christmas.
I feel like it's going to be highly emotional, like, because I totally get what you say, like the whole diaspora thing.
Yep.
I think for my personal journey, kind of through my Māori heritage, sometimes I don't feel like I fit in with that, and then I'm not Pākehā, and it's a bit like, oh, who am I? But that's all a part of the journey, and yeah, it's like my whānau is just starting it, and it's quite exciting.
And it's the whole nuance of being brown.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like Shreya's brown is different to my brown, different to particular, different to your brown. Mm. And like, people read my last name, they're like, oh, so Spanish. I was like, no, I'm not Spanish. I'm Filipina, actually.
Yep.
Who also grew up in Aotearoa, you know, like, so it becomes, and this whole conversation of like just being one thing and the whole boxing and ticking.
Yep.
Labels. Yes. But and it is nice when you do meet specific artists who the beauty and the universality of being specific, right?
That's exactly what I was getting at, Mary.
Oh, I was reading your mind, friend.
You were like,
I was there.
Really Professor X-ing it. Really good. I loved your Professor X face as well. Listeners can't see the amazing Professor X face that Mary.
My hand on my chin. My chin on my hand.
We'll work with it. So the more personal your experiences, and this is talking about Marianne, what she was saying about specificity and taking in what Shreya was saying about nuance, is that there are so many nuanced experiences that we're sharing as writers and as creatives, as a part of First World Problems 2.0, that they're very personal stories, and they're stories about everything from having your vagina bleed, which is having periods, to my story, which is where is home, and totally identifying with what Rema was saying, that now, because I don't have a mobile phone anymore in India, now my roaming is in India, whereas now my local network is New Zealand. Which is such a paradigm shift, you know, and something like that, just defining what's home now, and do you belong there? Do you belong at home? Do you belong in New Zealand?
I trip myself up when I would, like, you know, like you guys, I told you guys I'm going home.
Mm-hmm.
But like home for me is here as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, home is where the heart is. But you know, like how my heart is here. My heart's in Christchurch where my whānau is. My heart's, oh man, I have a lot of hearts.
This is exactly what my piece tries to ask the question.
Yeah. Pretty much have seen it.
It's amazing.
Just given you a good blurb.
That's really exactly funny you kind of brought that up, home, because I've like lived in so many places in New Zealand, and I consider it Christchurch home. No, I've never lived there. But that's where most of my whānau live. And so I think it's not really Christchurch, it's wherever my whānau is.
That's right.
That's where I feel.
That's right.
Yeah. That's where my home
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm actually, just like Prateek, I'm so excited for your marae visit.
Yeah.
That could be, I don't know, write it down, journal about it. Maybe something beautiful will come out of it. Because I have seen a lot of, you know, going home stories, but every time something different always, you know, strikes your heartstrings, and you're like, that little moment just, and even if it is just a split moment of you, you know, you just finding out that you do have a marae, you know, like, yeah, I'd love to know if I have a marae. Like, you know, when I have like Scottish and Irish friends, we're like, yeah, my family's got a castle. I'm like, okay. You know, I'd love to know if my family had either a church or a castle or a, you know, like a little place of this is the where we put our flag,
that's
you know.
Right.
I'd be interested. That's actually that's why I'm going home.
Are you going to plant a flag then, Marianne?
I might have to design it first. Let's do it. But you know, it is about going back home and like figuring out my roots and realizing that I don't speak two dialects. I speak two languages.
Maybe a second flag.
Oh, Shreya. No pressure. But in terms of like, in you saying give yourself some time, since my the first season of Kanai, I haven't I've probably opened my script like once to note down the things that changed in the season, but I haven't had the, I want to say courage, but like I haven't had the right capacity in my head to actually look at my script again and to know that there are some babies I need to grow or some babies I need to be like, it was nice to see you. You know, like, and I don't think, just like you, Pratik, I think I've gotten to a point where I was like, I don't think I'm quite ready because I know I'm getting really, I'm looking at it quite objectively now. Mm-hmm. Prior to before when it was just like my heart on my sleeve,
yep.
You know?
Yeah.
But guys, we've reached that point of the night where I'm going to play you a song recommended by Pratik.
I can lead you into the song.
Yeah, that would be great. If you give us a wee background why you recommended
this.
This
is a song from a movie that I've heard for far too long. This song is called Mera Kuch Saman. The lyrics are by Gulzar Saab and the music is by R.D. Burman. Vocals are by Asha Bhosle and it is from the year 1980 something.
This is so specific. I'm really enjoying this. And it'll be so funny if I played the wrong version.
Oh, well, we'll find
we'll
out anyway.
It out.
But this is one of those songs which is like spoken word, but it has a beautiful musicality to it. And that's what R.D. Burman, the music director, does for us.
Amazing.
Have a listen.
Let's have a listen. Do that again, Pratik.
You're welcome, Auckland.
That was so beautiful.
It's a beautiful song.
It was just like so serene.
Mm-hmm. Quite magical.
Mm-hmm. I would love to know what the song means.
I will give you a blow-by-blow update off-air, though.
Okay.
So that Rima can talk about her lovely show.
How I kind of you.
Okay. So many questions to ask. Rima is here for a show called Animal.
Yes, I am.
Which has amazingly sold out already.
Yeah, sold out. No tickets. Even my boyfriend missed out on a ticket.
What a silly boyfriend.
I know. I would be angry at him, but it's his birthday today, so.
Oh, happy birthday, boyfriend.
Happy birthday, but damn it, get tickets.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know what? Basement is actually really good at doing the whole waiting list thing. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if people are lining up on the door and he wants to be in there.
He should be there every night.
Yeah, trying to get that ticket.
Exactly.
But, Rima, I would love to know, what is the show about?
Okay, so it's based on Animal Farm by George Orwell, and it's an adaptation of that, Arlo Green has written, and it encompasses the world of the relationship between humans and animals and their roles in, I suppose, life. And then at one point, humans get taken out of the question and it's in the hands of the animals, and it's kind of like how we run things from there. When we don't have the power and now we have it, how do we move forward when there are so many different voices to be heard?
Mm. Wow. And that is
huge. Is it like, if anyone knows the novel, it just touches a lot of huge themes.
Some of the themes explored in the novel are very interesting about how power corrupts.
Yes.
And absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm. Wait, so the novel is called Animal Farm.
Animal Farm. And don't quote me on this, but it was written almost in disguise as a commentary on communism and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like I have heard this novel before, but damn.
Yeah, well, I would say come and see it, but
I know. What a useless host. Can't actually see the show. But the show is on October 22nd
to the 26th.
22nd to the 26th. That's what a good 2 weeks for you guys while I'm away. October 15 to 19 for First World Problems 2.0, and then 22-26.
Yeah.
And you mentioned off-air. Yeah, that's right, off-air. 22 cast members.
Yes, 22 cast members, and we're in the studio upstairs in the basement, so.
How are you going to fit those many people up there?
We just make it work.
It's not going to be a farm in there.
It is, and the audience is literally going to be on the farm with us.
It's going to be,
more or less.
They're going to be in it.
Yes.
Oh, damn.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds amazing. I just want to, like, because, you know, what's the capacity of a basement studio? Like 60, 65?
Yeah, well, we've had to make it more intimate due to health and safety, but it's still going to be, like, one hell of a show.
No, oh my gosh. Good on the people that got tickets.
Mm. Yeah, I know.
That's amazing.
And in terms of the 22 cast members there, including yourself, what was the audition process like for this? Like,
oh, thinking back, we did a lot of improv.
Mm-hmm.
Improv stuff. And you're doing it with strangers as well, and it's kind of like, okay, let's just jump in and get into it, as well as scenes. And then we kind of just kept on developing that as people became more suitable for certain characters.
So it was like a group audition scenario.
Yeah, and then it kind of whittled down to one-on-ones, I suppose, when we were deciding who would be best for which character.
How many pigs in those 22?
Oh, well, there's Napoleon.
Yep.
He is the hopeful leader. Because I'm old major, so I'm the old pig, old wise pig.
That's
but
right.
I must say, it is different to the novel.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
You will be surprised.
Okay. Well, I would be surprised if I could get a ticket, but considering
you
sold out. So waiting list for you, pretend.
Waiting list for me, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
So there's Napoleon. He's who I'm hoping will lead the animals in the right way. And there's myself. Snowball, she's a darling, and then Squealer. So there's four of us. Yeah,
that's amazing. And I'm just, I'm interested to see... Actually, I'm interested to know, like, was it always intended for the studio?
Oh, good question.
You might not be the right person
to
ask.
Be honest, I always think the studio was in mind.
Really? Yeah,
because someone else had taken...
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, so, I just want to be
just
in
the sheer number of bodies on stage is going to make it
and
feel...
And the physicality of it.
Yes, because the book itself gets very brutal very quickly.
Oh, it does.
It goes to some very dark places.
Mm-hmm. Your poster is very full on.
It is full on, and there are so many people a part of this process. I'm not too sure, but someone painted that for us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a huge group. It's a huge team. We are in collaboration with Stray Theatre, with Auckland Uni. And
amazing.
So many people coming in and playing a part, which is awesome.
When you say you collaborate with Auckland Uni, are there a lot of students who are students of theatre joining you in the production as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a whole mix of people who have gone through formal acting training, university students, and all sorts.
That would be such a good experience for the university students who are in training, because this is obviously a full-blown professional production, and with the variety of experience on offer, they can just look and learn, because that is one thing I find as an actor, that you can look and learn from people that you want to ape and be.
Yeah, and I myself, having done training, still can look and learn from people coming in who
absolutely
are fresh, and they bring that lovely rawness and like, man, I need to get back to that somehow. Yeah. So it's a lovely...
It's a both-way process.
Yeah,
then.
Absolutely.
It's your like classic Tuakana and Tina sort of system, right? Like, you know, the older learning from the younger and vice versa.
Yeah.
And also I think that in terms of in that idea, it's always just nice to go see shows, because you hear different stories, you hear different voices, you see different people, and it is a good way if you're an artist and this is a industry you want to be in, it's always good to know what stories are being told, what's not being told, how they're being told. And I think a 22 cast in the studio, that's going to be one heck of a show.
Yep.
No wonder you guys sold out too, because, oh my gosh. And I'm also really curious, as a performer in such a big ensemble, is it quite like an ensemble piece or?
Like within the farm, we have our, like we're the animals, basically most of us are all big one whānau, but within that whānau, there's our animal groups and how we relate to the other animals and the hierarchy of your type of animal. Mm. Yeah, it's highly interesting.
I think from your point of view, what would you like your audience to come out like with after the show? Like, how do you want your audiences to feel?
Well,
you're like,
to be honest, they can feel whatever they want to feel. But at the end of the day, I think it's just if we can get them asking questions, that would be awesome. Like the obvious kind of thing would be oppression. But looking at the whole system that all those sorts of values work within, and how people act out, whether they are oppressed or they're oppressing, whether they realise they're doing that or not, kind of looking at that sort of behaviour and, you know, acknowledging it.
And,
creating conversation around it, and also what part am I playing in this whole process? And, big ideas.
This is freaking deep.
With Animal Farm and an adaptation of that, that's what you would expect. Really, really kicked about the show. All the best. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, and being someone who's never read the story, I'm equally scared and equally excited.
Yeah, well, the thing is that there's a whole mixture of stuff going on. There's, like... There's humour. There's a rap. Oh my gosh, you wouldn't rap? Think there would be rap, but there is rap. And the guy
who raps, is it a pig that raps? Oh my gosh.
No, it's a sheep. And there's a little mouse who's his sidekick. And
you could say it was a bad rap.
That's a good one.
No,
it's good.
But it just goes from extremes. And there's, you know, there's some scenes that I was in rehearsal last night, and I myself as a character should have my stuff together, but just having to watch this particular scene, and it was quite upsetting actually as Rayma to watch it. Mm. And it's like I had to just walk on in and be okay, like have it all together. And I'm like, I'm just crying. This is terrible. But
this is going to be exciting.
Yep.
I'm really happy for the people that got tickets to see the show. But also another thing is, like, if you got tickets, make sure you turn up.
Yes, please do.
I find that people, you know, I mean, I'm happy that you have all the money to blow, but like, I find that, you know, people who buy tickets and then don't show up, I'm like, man.
As much as I'd like for people like me who are on the waiting list now to get in, please go and turn up to shows.
Support it. And that's also a really good thing that you brought up in terms of the topic of oppression. When are you being oppressed, or are you the one oppressing, and whether you know that, and what do you do about it when you do know it?
Or are you being a bystander, which is kind of an action in itself?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Also looking at the, I suppose, perspective of the oppressor, it's kind of like questioning the morality of it, because they might see it as completely like this is the way
benevolent
the world works, and it's understanding their values and, you know, not just silencing them but really engaging in a conversation so we can understand it, and I suppose as a society tackle it so we can, you know.
It's like the conversation of being entitled, you know, like when you know you are, or when you don't know you're not, and if you are, what do you do about it? Or, you know, like,
I think the first step, continuing the conversation, has to be at least accepting that you are privileged. That's the first step. And with the whole games that are being played in Animal Farm, and as we will see in Rayma's production, the understanding is the hardest bit. And then we can at least come to the table knowing where we stand in the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a huge theme in Animal Farm, well, Animal. Let's get it right, is education.
Mm-hmm.
And
education's hard to come by, man.
Yeah, and educating ourselves in different perspectives and maybe why people act the way they do. Not saying that anyone can act the way they do because they come from a certain perspective, but kind of understanding that and finding ways to, I suppose, better society for everyone, so we can all kind of, at the very least, coexist.
Exactly. Because we all have to win, right?
Yep.
It's like this whole thing of like one being better than the other. It's like, like we all got to be in this together, so we might all as well enjoy it together.
One of the themes in the show, in the book Animal Farm, is who can write and read and who can't, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what I remember. And that's when you said educate, that bulb finally lit up, and the pigs can?
Yeah, well, most of the pigs can.
Yeah.
Don't give it away, Pratik.
Oh, damn, spoilers are up.
No, it's pretty blatant.
We get it, you read the book, okay?
Oh, gosh. Or I Googled it.
Yeah. But it's kind of that idea that when the humans are involved, they're operating on what may be seen as a higher level.
Mm.
But also the pigs having the knowledge of that, it's kind of like making sure everyone has that knowledge so we can all, you know,
progress together.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love to ask just really quickly, I know we don't have much time, but I want to know what else you guys do outside of your respective creative parts in this universe. So Pratik, you mentioned you're a doctor.
I'm a doctor in training in internal medicine, and I work across public hospitals in Auckland. I have been doing that for the past 5 years.
And You're surviving with like very little sleep, or like how does that work for you?
No, I mean, we do have pretty stressful rosters. One of the reasons why I'm not acting this time, so about 60-65 hour weeks, which our roster does. But yeah, it's not too shabby. We're trying to get to better rosters for doctors.
Oh, I love that. Letting me know how it is in the health industry. Because, I'm never going to know, am I? What about you, Sri? And you, journalism?
No, well, I used to be, but I work in communications and marketing now. I work in local government, and that's my day job. But I also blog at Weekend Creative.
Wait, you blog?
Yeah.
Tell me more about this blog.
So it's called Weekend Creative, but that's not what we're here to talk about, Marianne.
I'm just really curious. First World Problems 2.0. Go see it. Yeah. October 15th to 19th. And Animal October 22 to 26th. I'm really good at remembering dates, but not mathematically good. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It's like tangent team, but it's like I had to learn the script one time. And I had a lot of like coordinates and numbers. Mm. I could not learn that script. It was so hard for me. But handy for my producer brain. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what time, what date, when.
That's amazing.
I know, but I'm just like 2 + 5. See, I couldn't even pick a number just then. It's 7. I know it's 7. It is 7.
That's very good, Mary Ash.
Thank you, guys. And what about you, Raima? What do you do outside of acting?
I'm a speech and drama tutor for little children.
Oh.
Yeah, which is probably not a very good advertisement for myself because I'm very nasally today, getting over it.
It's because you were sick. You are human. You are human.
I know, unfortunately.
But that's okay. I'm very... Oh, this is... it's always nice to know when, you know, creatives always buzzing around doing the other things. Really exciting stuff. But I'm going to give you guys... You guys... No one can see whom I'm pointing. This is great. Good job, Marianne. I'm going to give First World Problems. This is your time to plug your show. Tell us where to get tickets, how to get tickets, who do we need to get in touch with or where, all of the details.
We are at the basement, the main space, from 15th to the 19th of October. We have a matinee also on the Saturday. That's at 3 o'clock. Otherwise, all shows from the 15th to the 19th of October are at 8 p.m. You can find your tickets on iTicket. You can find your tickets at the basement website. And we're pretty much shouting from the rooftops at my Facebook or my Instagram, which is at PrateekDV. And otherwise, we are looking sold out for 15th, which is opening night.
Yep.
But there are some tickets available from 16th to the 19th. So please find some time and come.
Yeah, but you'll have to get in quick because after all this promotions, there's not going to be any left soon. So get in there quickly.
Don't get into the waiting list because, guys, it's proving to be quite hard for Animal on the other side of the table here.
Yeah.
Before I hit Raima up about Animal... What is it? This is just a side note for the listeners. What was the song that you recommended earlier, Shreya?
It's a Bob Dylan song.
Bob Dylan, that's it. Okay, Raima, go do your plug.
Well, we are Animal and we'll be in the basement up in the studio from the 22nd to the 26th of October. We are sold out, so tough cookies. Unless you want to be like my boyfriend, lining up at the basement every night waiting for some extra tickets for people who aren't turning up, you should go to there. Go down there and wait.
But happy birthday, boyfriend.
Yes, happy birthday. That's right.
Give him a shout out. Come on.
Oh, happy birthday, Andy. 33 today.
Wow, I love that. That's great number two. I like that. Well, guys, just before we play, is it Love Minus Zero / No Limits?
Mm-hmm.
This is a recommendation by Shreya, which I will happily respect. And I'm excited to listen to it because I've actually never heard this.
Oh.
I'm very excited. Have you heard it, Shreya?
I don't think so, but I say that about a lot of songs, and I'm like, oh, no, I've heard that before.
Yeah, I'm terrible with names and titles and all that stuff. Oh, one thing I do want to ask, though, how many cast are in First World Problems?
We have 24 actors and 10 directors.
Boom.
This is... Maybe that's why you guys have to be in the mainstream because there's two more people than...
Maybe that was like the threshold.
We can do 22 in the studio, but not 24.
We just knew Animal had 22, so we just had to up the number. And we took one in for safety. We were like, 24 it is.
I love that. But also, I want to give Basement Theatre a massive shout out. You guys are doing some incredible mahi down at CBD there, down Lower Grays Ave. If you are someone who's listening to the radio at the moment and has no idea where the Basement Theatre is, you should totally go on your cheeky Google and look them up. They're such good platform supporting experimental works that are either premiering or new, you know, experience works coming back into the picture, but also they're so supportive and the vibe in that place is lit. That is my very millennial description, but it's
they're
so
an incredible space. An incredible space.
It's warm. They have, you know, good staff, great staff. a while ago they were doing mulled wine or something.
It was they awesome. Did do mulled wine for and, windows. It was amazing.
And it was just the smell in that place was just a whore. I'm a theatre personnel, you know.
So arty.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not promoting alcohol or anything, but I'm just saying it's a good vibe. And, you know, they've got some... They've been a great home to so many different creatives and different groups that you won't normally see in mainstream platforms, which I'm like, good on you guys for giving us a space to be loud and make our ruckus. And
Basement is the next mainstream space. We are chipping away at it, and we are the mainstream space
that's
now.
That's right. That's right. I mean, actually, yeah, Basement is like what, like it's a small venue, but it's where everyone hangs out.
Yep,
yeah.
That's correct.
Because, like, you know... It's nice in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely. There's some beautiful artwork and painting in the space. There's two different places you can be, studio and the main, and also great places to eat around there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have great food. Plan a dinner date with your loved ones. Have great food by about 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock. You can come and watch First World Problems 2.0.
That's right. And what time is the animal?
Oh,
do we need to do a quick Google?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's maybe 6:30.
So early dinner for
just
people.
Just Googleizing that.
Googleizing. Give me a second. Please hold for team. Animal.
But while we're holding, I just want to say thank you to everyone involved. It's such a huge group, and it feels like we've all become this really big whānau. So love you guys.
And I can confirm it is at 6:30 o'clock.
Oh, yes. Oh,
you did know
I should have just acted like I knew what it was. Yes.
For next time. For
yep,
next time.
Exactly.
But team, that... Oh, I just knocked my mic. That was not very, very professional of me. But team, that comes to the end of the show. We will be back next week for another exciting episode with a number of beautiful guests to talk about some comprehensive artwork that's happening in Tamaki Makaurau. But until then, spread the love, kindness, be safe, work hard, and go out there and kick some arts. And would you like to outro us with the song, Shreya?
Well, yes, sure.
Why the song?
It's a very special song because it talks about vulnerability, and I think that is what writing to me is about, and that is what the show First World Problems is about. You know, you're putting your vulnerability out there, you're putting your stories out there, which are so special that you hold them so close to your heart. So I think it was just quite apt to talk about that.
What a good way to end the show. Yeah. So this is Love Minus Zero by Bob Dylan. Let's have a listen. Oh, hang on, I don't think I played it. Let's see now.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals or violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true like ice, like fire. People carry roses and make promises by the hours. My love, she laughs like the flowers Valentine's can't buy her. In the dime stores and bus stations, people talk of situations, read books, repeat quotations, draw conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future, my love, she speaks softly. She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. The cloak and dagger dangles, madams light the candles in ceremonies of the horsemen. Even the pawn must hold a grudge. Statues made of matchsticks crumble into one another. My love winks, she does not bother. She knows too much to argue or to judge. bridge at midnight trembles. The country doctor rambles. Banker's nieces seek perfection, expecting all the gifts that wise men bring. The wind howls like a hammer. The night blows raining. My love, she's like some raven at my window with a broken wing.